I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Amazing FBA podcast. This is your host, Michael Veazey. Warm welcome to the show, particularly warm welcome today to a guest from Australia, Peter Highbloom of onlinesellersinsurance.com.au. That's quite the URL there. They are specialist Amazon insurers and they are Amazon sellers themselves. So it's not a sexy topic, but very, very important. So Peter, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you. And to the listeners, listen, we'll do our best to make insurance fun. I don't know if it's possible to make it sexy, but at least we'll talk about some things that are relevant and, provide some good value for their time.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, that was a terrible introduction by me because obviously I shouldn't say, like, let's just say this is a real down subject we're going to talk about. But I'm actually, the reality is that anything that makes your business more certain, reduces risk and can increase your profits down the line longer term is obviously a great thing, right? But people like to bury their heads in the sand about this stuff. So we'll talk about the insurance and risk side of things, not a word people want to see, but grown-up business people deal with risk as opposed to burying their head in the sand. But tell us a bit about yourself first, because obviously you said you're also an Amazon seller, which is always reassuring for people who are buying a service from somebody that they understand their situation. So give us a bit of background about yourself first.
Yeah, sure. Listen, we were working as regular insurance brokers looking after people's business insurance. So we're talking plant and machinery, factories, regular businesses. I came across a course online and heard about the FBA model. And listen, I thought to myself, oh, that sounds interesting. It'd be good to have a little side hustle. And I've always wanted to explore the online space. And I thought Amazon would be a good way to dip my toe in the water. Look, I particularly like the fact that I didn't have to have stock stored in my garage or, handle imports into the country and this sort of thing. And it captured me. As I went through the course and eventually did my first order and, all those scary steps, and I made a goal to myself, look, if this thing's going to work for me, I want to at least get it to the point where I go live and I see for myself whether it is as good as everyone makes out, it can be if you follow the steps. So I followed the steps and went live and was nervous and scared and, had mistakes and nightmares in China and all the normal stuff, but all the stock sold out, and it was so exciting for myself and for my wife. And I said, wow, let's order again. And look, I started just getting involved in the community down here in Australia and talking to other sellers, just sort of, being in the community and learning from the ones who are ahead of me, helping the ones who are behind me and encouraging them. And then people sort of read my profile and said, oh, you guys do insurance. You can help us out with product liability. And I, of course, I'm happy to help. I said, sure. What do you need? And I had a look into it and realized that it was actually impossibly difficult to get proper Amazon compliant product liability insurance. And I said to my wife, we're onto something here. We've got what is the biggest company in the world who's got all these third-party sellers, and no one can actually protect their products. And that was 2 years ago. And fast forward now, we have sold our regular bricks and mortar business. No lease, no staff. Goodbye, 300 clients. And now we run a digital insurance agency. So we look after people's product liability, shipping and cargo for, Amazon, Shopify, eBay, the whole bit. It's completely online and I'm still selling on Amazon and loving that journey. But that's how I evolved into this space and why I'm in the unique position to be able to talk to Amazon sellers, and I know their lingo. Like, I'm in Seller Central every day, dealing with issues and checking my stock and doing all the things everyone else does. And look, it just puts us in, I think it's a good reason why you've got me here talking to the people, because very rare combination to come across, first of all, an Amazon specialist for insurance, but then someone who is actively selling and I'll continue to actively sell. I really enjoy it, but I like helping others along the way as well. And when the two businesses go together, it's just a lovely combination. And that's how I got to be sitting in front of you guys today.
Amazing. Well, I know, by the way, you're being very sort of courteously shy about saying who the course is, but I know that it's Reliable Education and Adam Hudson's course. And we had Adam on the course, the podcast, I should say, a while ago. And one of the reasons I did that, and get approached by a lot of Amazon course sellers, as you can imagine, running a podcast on Amazon. And I'm very, very selective who we work with, because there's a lot of misinformation and sort of half information out there. I love that great, very Australian combo that Adam has of being very straight up, but also very positive. So I think he's somebody we're very happy to be associated with. So delighted to meet yet another one of his successful students. I've worked with several, and it's a good training. So great that you're involved with those guys. That gives another reassurance that it's from a great place. And as you say, great to combine your sort of old day job skills with new ones. And that's a very smart idea. I mean, a lot of people abandon their day job skill set they've worked on for 30 years when they come into the Amazon space. And that always seems to me a great shame, at the very least. So great to hear that. So let's get to the insurance then. Let's cut to the chase with this. First of all, I guess the words insurance and risk go together. Let's talk a little bit about risk. Lovely word. But we ought to talk about it. What sort of risks are you really running as a third-party seller? And are you even in the frame if somebody else has made the products for you?
Yeah, great question. And it's a great question because as soon as people start getting into this, they realize, if they're serious, that you're building a business. And when you build a business, part of any business that people have, they have insurance. Whether they're cutting hair, whether they're, they've got a shop, or they're even working at markets here in Australia. They're strict. Everyone who does any sort of business has to have insurance. And it is no different when you sell online. Sometimes people seem to think that, it's the Wild West, this online space, and whatever they do, they're not accountable for. But listen, and I love that line, if you want to make serious money, you've got to get serious. And with building a business, you've got to get serious about protecting this asset that you're building along the way. Now, there's two reasons why insurance come into this. The first reason is, now legally, when you get a product manufactured in any country, India, China, et cetera, Vietnam, you get these products made, you put your brand on them, which I'm presuming that most of the listeners do, and the serious ones, they're all moving towards that sort of branding where they own it and they build an asset. And let's hopefully one day you can sell that brand because you've built it up and it's substantial. See, if you're doing that model, getting something made, putting your brand on it and then selling it in other countries, legally you are deemed to be the manufacturer. And I often get people saying, no, but I'm not the manufacturer. Oh, I get it made in another factory. Yeah, I understand that. But as soon as you put your brand and your name to it and it gets sold under your seller account, you are deemed to be the manufacturer. So therefore, you are legally responsible for that problem or that product and the problems that come from it. So the problems, the short answer for the risk is personal injury or property damage. If that product incurs personal injury, property damage, that's one of the big risks. The second reason why it's important to have insurance is Amazon's now actually changed their terms of service and really tightened up the wording in the terms of service so that it's now an actual requirement to hold Amazon harmless is the terms they use. So it was actually about a month ago, the new business service agreement, Amazon's business service agreement, came online. It supersedes the old rules that people may have heard of, and some of the more experienced sellers you would have heard, you only need insurance if you do $10,000 a month or more for 3 consecutive months. That's been superseded. Other people have heard, you only actually really need general liability insurance if you've got a pro seller account. That has been superseded as well. It's now a requirement in the business service agreement. And it says from day one, as soon as you start selling on Amazon, there is this clause in there which says we have a hold harmless agreement put out over our head. So that if for any reason Amazon suffers loss because of our activity on their platform, they have right to come after us to get their money back. And a great way to protect yourself is actually through insurance, because that loss can come from lots of different ways, but the most common cause is usually from people using the product and then having some sort of accident, property damage, and filing a complaint with Amazon. Amazon then goes after the third-party seller.
Yeah, this is very, very interesting because, first of all, thank you very much for clarifying that. I mean, there's quite a few myths knocking around. Well, partly because, like everything in Amazon, what is now a myth was once true, but a lot of people haven't clocked the fact that it's changed, because I remember those days when you had to be doing $10,000 a month to get the insurance and stuff. So as the minimum, rather, where you had to get insurance, I should say. So that was quite, you know, friendly to new sellers and gave you a little bit of an, you know, head start before you had to get really serious. Now those days are over. And I think partly because of the history recently where, I can't remember the details now offhand, but I did write an article about it, that Amazon was held directly liable for that lady who's dog leash basically whipped her in the eye or something along those lines. And yes. So, of course, they're extra careful about that now. So I would point out as well that people sometimes think the risk is being sued by some lady whose dog leash has hit her in the eye. But what you're describing is Amazon suing you, which is like, you know, the one of the biggest companies in the entire planet with a genius legal team, because that's how they've, a lot of their business strategies revolved around various legal things, including dodging sales tax for 20 straight years, which is an extraordinary achievement slash a terrible thing, depending which you see. But I would point out, you do not want to have the best legal team in the world in America, at least after you. So that gives you an extra really powerful reason to get legitimate insurance, right? Yes. It's very interesting the way you put it. It's not about a lady who's being damaged by a product coming after you. It's they go after Amazon and then Amazon comes after you, if I've understood correctly, right?
That's correct, yes. And there's legal precedence of that, actually. It was a case where someone had a product which modified a toilet in some particular way. The toilet leaked and caused property damage. So tiles, wet areas, their plaster, et cetera. So the person filed a claim with their insurance company. The insurance company went after Amazon to get the money back, because Amazon was the platform where the person got the product. Amazon then went after the third-party seller. And that's, as you said, that is scary to think that that sort of thing is going on. And this brings us to this point of why people need to actually sometimes think about the products that they're actually choosing, especially if you're in the early stage or you're looking at bringing on a new product. I mean, if you were like me, if you were like thinking of bringing on a new product, you've probably got a short list of two or three and you're trying to break down and decide which one you're going to do next. That is a really good time to also bring into your thoughts what could be the insurance applications, or you know, what could be the ramifications of going into a niche that I'm not really too aware of or don't know a lot about, just because the numbers look good or there's a lot of money in it, right? That's often what we look at first. And what's the competition like? And the last thing people often think of is, gosh, I wonder if I'd be able to get insurance for that thing. And there are some things that are uninsurable, or there are some items that are expensive. Like even in this day and age, I remember in the early days, people were coming to me and they had quotes for $5,000 or $10,000 for very safe seeming things, but the insurers were so scared of the American risk. Today, for those same items, we've got people paying perhaps $1,000 to $2,000 Aussie dollars for those exact same items, because the insurance companies knew nothing about Amazon. Part of the reason Roxanne and I have been successful in this space with online sellers is the fact that we have actually educated the insurers on what Amazon is. And I'm not sure in the UK exactly where you sell secondhand goods, but in Australia there's like Gumtree or the Trading Post or there's Craigslist in the States. Amazon is not that. You cannot just go, any old person can't just go on there and pop up an ad and expect to get sales. When you get into this, we all know that there are certain procedures you've got to go through. First of all, just to get your seller account open. That can be a nightmare for some people if you do something wrong. And then, of course, if you go into a gated category, there's all these steps you've got to go through and burdens of proof put on you before you're allowed to even sell. So we educated the insurance companies on that, and that is why we've been able to help our clients get their insurance rates down, because now they understand the risk a whole lot better.
Yeah,
but and this product is very important.
Yeah, and that's very interesting. I want to pick up on what you're just saying. I mean, there's always a reason why Amazon does things which, some of which just purely serves Amazon, to be sure. But a lot of it serves their customers and or the sort of their risk profile as a company. So one of the things you just pointed out is that it's a pain in the whatevers to open an Amazon account sometimes. And it certainly can be a lot of hoops to justify, to go through to justify being able to selling a particular category. But one of the reasons they do that is because the customers get a better experience. The customers perceive it as lower risk slash better quality. But also, it's interesting that you're pointing out now that insurance companies, once they understand that, also see it the same way. And I suppose what I'm saying is Amazon has a lot of quality control that we have to comply with, but you can actually benefit from that if everyone else in the system understands that, right? So I guess what you're saying is you've now, which is an amazing job that you've done, you've got the insurers to basically halve or more their premiums based on the fact they understand that the level of quality control that Amazon enforces on its sellers, right?
Yes, exactly right. That's right.
Excellent. So let's talk about then, you know, very, very good point that you've pointed out about having as part of the mix of your product selection, yes, demand, of course. We also see the dollar signs and then look at the competition, which is what knocks 98% of possible products out. And we realize ain't going to be possible to compete there. And what's left, we tend to go, okay, great, let's just go and order samples. So the due diligence on insurance, then, how would you suggest we go about that if we're not, obviously, unlike you, insurance experts? What sort of thing do we need to be looking out for in products before we
start? I think the first thing for people to realize is that they're not tricks, these things. There's not like secret little things in order to sell in more difficult categories. In fact, there's a school of thought which I tend to agree with, and that school of thought is the more compliance that is required, in other words, the more safety standards that the product is required to meet, and the more you are required to get that product then tested at safety standard facilities so that you have a report for Amazon that shows that your product meets those safety standards before you're allowed to sell in that category, actually is a great way to look at putting a bit of a moat or a wall around your business. Because there's a lot of people who would think that's just too hard, too much trouble. I want to make money now. That I'm going to do something that's easy. So for those of you who are looking at something, you think, gosh, imagine the compliance involved in doing something in baby category or children's toys or something like that. Things to do with kids and babies, people sue for. Okay. So the insurer really looks at those two categories, but so too does Amazon. There are a lot of safety standards and requirements that Amazon requires those products to have before they'll even let you sell them. If you show the insurance company, and this is what we help our clients do, if you show the insurance company that you have met those standards, so they are just national standards. And if you a simple Google search of product safety standards in the USA, up comes I think it's the CPSA.gov. You know, it's just the government organization that controls safety standards. You can type in your product, do a search, it sends you down a path, and you go about getting your products properly compliant to meet those standards, and then you can sell. The only other thing that I think people could do as part of their due diligence is make sure that they've got the correct instruction manuals. And I think also the other little things like safety warning labels and packaging on the product. And if they meet national standards and if they meet Amazon standards, which more often than not exceed the national, but do both, then people can be pretty confident that they've done their due diligence and they're going in the right direction. And I think we're talking insurance, but in this sort of market, there's a lot of people coming on board now selling on Amazon, and the sorts of things you've got to think about are out of the box. The days of making money selling a cheese board are over. Everyone's thought of that. I mean, maybe perhaps you're going to come up with the most unique cheese board in the world, but I would be just going, you've got to go for things that are actually less sexy, less, you know, you want to pull out and show everybody at the dinner party, but that's where the opportunity lies. It's those funny little necessities of life that people really need, often to do with unfortunate things to do with our body and our lifestyle, that are the key for people to make money at the moment. And a lot of those have a few safety requirements around those, but when you put the energy and the effort in, you know, you've got yourself a business that's not going to be attacked quickly and easily by Chinese competition.
Oh, wow. There's such a bunch of value in there. That's way more than just insurance things. So let me just reflect on a couple of things. I often do this. I was thinking, you know, when I listen to my episodes back, I'm like, Mike, shut up. But one of the reasons I do this is just to give people a chance, because it's an audio medium, to just think about things and let them sink in when they're really significant. And one of the things, there's no tricks. I like the fact that actually it's an opportunity. The fact that a lot of people are going to walk away from this because they're scared, or that they can't be bothered to jump through some hoops, is great, because that means there's an opportunity for the rest of us there. And I really like the fact of unsexy products using medical issues. I suppose I would like this because that's exactly the advice I just gave to a client recently. But I said, look, you know, let's look at the fact that the global population is aging, and they're basically undersold to compared to sort of 20-somethings. You don't have as much money as a group, but they're all over Instagram. And everyone's advertising on Facebook and Instagram and what have you to try and capture that market. I said, look, there's a ton of people with medical needs. If they're not shopping on Amazon, their daughters or sons are. So I really like the fact you flagged that up, because I just think as an overall global trend, that's only going one way, right? So I think that's really smart advice. And I think what's interesting about that is insurance and or compliance is an intrinsic part of that strategy. So I think you're ready, Peter, to produce an entire course now. You've had a thought, you've proven it for yourself for 10 minutes. I mean, that's more than enough for an Amazon course these days, he says, joking.
Thank you, Michael. I'll be lying over a Lamborghini before you know it.
Absolutely. Listen, please.
Have you seen those guys? Oh my gosh.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, your stable of rented Lamborghinis for the day and a rented Lexus, I think, absolutely. But joking apart, I think that's really super smart strategy. So thank you so much for making us think that way. It's such a great way to see insurance to flip it on its head and say, okay, unsexy things like risk and unsexy products becomes sexy things like defensible products and profit, which is amazing. So let's move on then to another area of insurance, which is, okay, we thought about the type of product you're getting. There's the Amazon basic compliance policies we talked about. What about defective products, the things that don't perform as they should? How does that sort of end up working with insurance?
Yeah, really good. That's a really good question on helping people to understand what they're covered for. The example I often use is, imagine that you produced a car cover and you got your car cover made in China. Somebody bought it and they put it over their Mercedes Benz. And in the heat or the wind and the rain and whatever it is, the car cover stuck to the car. And when the person tried to remove the cover off the car, it was stuck. It removed and damaged some of the paint. And the person's gone, the roof of my car's wrecked. They've taken photos. They've sent it in. You would be covered. That's property damage. And your product has done damage to somebody else's property. And that's what the general liability or product liability cover covers you for. Now, the issue you've got as the seller is you've got 999 of those things sitting in the factory, or you get my idea. You've got all of these things now that have gone out into the world and they are defective. The insurance does not cover defective products. Defective products is on you. The damage that those products do to a person's property, you are covered for. So if you sold 150 of those, and let's say five of them turned into claims, and I'm just making the numbers up, but let's say there was more than just one person who had a problem with that car cover, you would be covered for all of those damaged vehicles, but you will not be reimbursed by the insurance company for ordering a defective product.
Thank you. That's super clear. And again, it's an interesting distinction. One of the interesting things I found over the years of interviewing experts in this space is that they often actually make things very clear and simple, whereas people who half understand things make it very complicated. So you just drawn a distinction between the damage that a product covers, creates, and that's covered by the insurance, versus the actual product itself, which if you've done a bad job in inspection or due diligence on your supplier, you're saying isn't covered. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, great. That's a very, very nice, clear distinction. Yes. Yeah. So in other words, presumably then, let me ask this slightly, I don't know if it's a dumb question or not, but is it possible to get insurance cover that will cover you against your factory supplying defective products?
That's called product recall, and it's really expensive and it's difficult to get. Even if the product was made in the UK and you were selling it in the UK, for in our case, we did have clients who asked about that, who were getting things made in Australia and selling them in Australia, and it was expensive and really difficult cover to get. In my guesstimate would be it would be next to impossible to get that for something therefore made in China and then getting sold out throughout the world. I don't know of anyone who even goes close to covering a cover like that. Not possible to get it, but it's called product recall.
Right. Well, thank you for clarifying that. And I think it's one of those things where if you're asking that problem, if you're asking that question, and by the way, it's the sort of question you do get asked by people. I did once have somebody who asked me for a guarantee of a return on their investment in mentoring with me, which wasn't going to be crazy amounts. Like maybe it was £1,000 or whatever that is in Australian dollars, 1800 US, 1200, 1500 US dollars. And I said, no. And it's not because you don't have a money back guarantee with me and the work I do with you, but I cannot guarantee an outcome. That is the nature of entrepreneurship. And in that case, I don't know how frank I was, but I think I almost said you need to just get a day job or an evening job, and there's nothing wrong with that either. So I think if you're that risk averse, you're trying to pass the buck to other people, what you need to do is let the buck stop here, as whoever said that, the American president, and actually just make sure that you do your due diligence in finding your suppliers, and then also have a clear, as part of the purchase order, it's a slightly off piece, but kind of relates to the same thing of risk reduction. In the purchase order, you need to have a very clear sort of shopping list of the qualities that a product should have, a clear list of the things that it might not have if it's defective, maybe with photos, and then saying that same list to an inspection company when you get it made. And if you do all those things, in my experience, you reduce the nightmares from China, which we've all hit those things, but there is a structure and a way of doing things that I think is the solution rather than insuring against them. Because it's a rather, how can I put that? That feels to me rather like you're trying to pass the buck right down the line for your own due diligence, right?
Correct, yes.
So, but thank you for clarifying that, because that's a really good reality check, because it might be there's a fantasy in people's mind they can do that. I think we've sort of burst that bubble. So let's come on to another question, which is general liability insurance versus product liability. We've been talking about products up to now. I mean, where is there a case where we would need general liability insurance in the first place? Why is it not enough to just have product liability insurance?
The difference, there is no difference other than the country in which you are talking about the insurance. So in the United States, they call product liability insurance general liability. In Australia, we call it product liability. And I'm pretty sure in the UK, you guys call it product liability insurance as well. It is the same thing. It's just called general liability in the United States.
Right. So there's no practical difference then?
No, that's correct.
Okay, good. Well, that makes that a lot simpler as well. So we talked about whether it's compulsory or not. We've definitely covered the fact that it certainly is. Is that true across all the marketplaces, by the way? So in Amazon.com, so if you're selling in the USA, it's compulsory. Do you know if that's true in Europe or Japan or Australia as the main marketplaces that other people would consider?
Yes, it is. And there's while we're talking about compulsory, we'll talk about what the policy actually has and why I was saying we've educated the insurers. First thing is, you know, you're required to have $1 million US dollars worth of cover, and that's not a problem. Everyone's happy with that. The next thing is you need to make sure that the policy properly identifies that your sales or a percentage of your sales are coming from the USA, because insurers are scared of products being sold in the US and Canada because those guys sue one another so much. Full stop. It's like you can go to an insurance company and they'll say, I'll give you everywhere in the world except the USA and Canada for, you know, a lot less than the US. The USA and Canada really does, you know, cause them to get very uncomfortable. So when if a person's already got this and they've gone to their insurance broker or provider and they think, I think I've got that, you need to check, first of all, that it covers for a million of cover, which is pretty easy, really, because if you in Australia, normal product or public liability starts at 5 million and goes up from there. So when we told them we need just $1 million, they had no problem with the amount. So that's easy. Next point, though, that they don't like is that so much of the percentage of a lot of people's sales is coming out of the States. So for the guys in the UK, I'm not sure what percentage it would represent, but it could be 50%, 80%, 20%, it could vary. However, you need to be sure that is declared on the paperwork. But here's the big one. The third point that the policy is required to have, and this is an Amazon requirement, and it says that Amazon requires for them to be noted on the insurance policy as an interested party. The wording is Amazon and its affiliates and associated companies or whatever. So basically, Amazon is tacking on their insurance to your insurance. Now, remember that hold harmless that I talked about in the business service agreement? That is that wording coming into play there so that they can use your insurance policy to basically help them not be out of pocket. So there's three things. It's got to have the million cover. It's got to really state that a high percentage of the turnover often is coming out of the United States or Canada, both in the one. And then the most important is that the policy needs to note Amazon and its affiliates as interested parties on the policy. That's the bit that is really hard to get.
Okay. Interesting. So that's why you start to look at specialist insurance brokers who understand Amazon and the risk profile of Amazon. Like yourself, so which is presumably why you managed to sort of get insurance premiums that were half or less of what people had before.
Yes.
Okay, because the Amazon sort of bit presumably scares the bejesus out of insurers to start with until you reassure them, right?
Yeah, yeah. You educate them and then satisfy their needs and then say, listen, and then by the way, there's one more thing we need. We need you to put this interested party thing in there. And they go, oh, no, we can never do that. And we're like, guys, this is what they require. Amazon's, you know, the largest company in the world. It's growing. It's turning into a giant. And, you know, I've got to sell the insurer on what an opportunity this is. So that's why a lot of them said no, but we got a few who saw the opportunity like we did and went, yes, okay, we're going to put that in. So that's why when I say we offer a fully compliant policy, we make sure that we tick all of those compliance boxes.
Great. And another way of looking at that is a very interesting, more general business point then is that for the insurance companies, as well as for us as sellers, one way of seeing risk is as a red flag to run away. But another way of seeing it is some people, including insurance companies, but also other sellers, will be scared by risk. And therefore, on the other side of risk, as long as we assess it accurately, is opportunity. Because actually, the assessment of the risk in the minds of the scared sellers and the scared insurers, I guess, is the same. It's like, you know, 8 out of 10 high risk, whereas in fact, maybe it's 3 out of 10 in reality. And that misperception gives us an opportunity, right? So it's very interesting to flip things on its head from the traditional sort of newbie way of looking at the world. Maybe you should be looking for risk or what's perceived as risk, but then being more accurate assessing than other people. I mean, yeah. By the way, guys, I should probably get some serious insurance myself because that sounds like a risky thing to be advising on a public podcast. So look, go and do your due diligence. You're responsible for your own decisions, okay? But nevertheless, it does seem to me it's almost now, as you said, you know, that the really obvious plays have been played. Maybe we need to be more imaginative about, well, definitely need to be more imaginative about how we choose products, and maybe risk profile is part of the picture that we should be actively seeking out. So it's an interesting thing that you're implying there.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.